Now I was looking for video clips to try to see if I could capture this. Video clips of modern day riots, and there's a lot of them on YouTube, trying to see if I could capture the tension and the fear that just sweeps over a city when something like this breaks out. And some of them were pretty frightening. I wasn't able to find any I could use today because some of them were ultra violent. There were scenes that really ought not be shown. Others had a lot of profanity in them from the crowd shouting various things. And then there were others that really just didn't capture it because it was from too far away. And so I really didn't find anything. But I want you to imagine. I don't know if you guys have ever seen video clips of riots. Los Angeles several years ago, cars just driving, pulling up into an intersection, and folks just start throwing, you know, cinder blocks through the windows and beating on the cars, dragging people out, leaving their body in the street. Things set on fire, buildings burned, businesses burned, people just doing things they wouldn't dream of doing any other time. And what starts as a small group, and a lot of these things do start as a small group of people. Those people get all fired up like these guys did. The next thing they know, they get other people fired up. And it just begins to swell, and people get drawn in. Like I said here, they don't even really know the original complaint. They just get caught up in the mob mentality, and a spirit of lawlessness begins to just take hold of people. It's satanic. Because people then, they feel like, well, I'm in this mob, I can do anything I want, and I will never get a call to account for it, so I'll just go crazy. I'll do stuff. Whatever whim comes to mind, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to destroy. I'm going to steal. I'm going to pillage. I'm going to take out my aggression. I'm just going to beat up on some folks, because who cares? Nobody will know. And then multiply that by this massive crowd fired up with rage and anger about some trumped up kind of accusation. And you have a violent scene. Scary. Scary stuff. And that's what was happening here. This vast, huge, violent mob that was caught up in rage and confusion. I mean, the core of these people were saying, you know, hey, this guy is really literally taking money out of our pockets. He's pulling food off the table. He's going to make us poor and destitute. We're not going to stand for this. We want to kill this guy. Who the heck does he think he is? Coming into our city and telling these people that what we give them is wrong and they shouldn't buy from us anymore? I don't think so. We're going to take care of this today. It stops today. We're taking this guy out. And it was a nightmare. So you have this violent mob, and they want Paul, but they get a hold of his buddies, Gaius and Aristarchus, and they probably figure, well, we'll hold these guys hostage. We'll bring them in one way or the other. And they take these guys, drag them into the theater, and I think we have a picture of the theater there. Yeah, ancient, the ruins in Ephesus. This was actually the theater, the amphitheater. It holds, I think, it seats like 25,000 people. But you can imagine a sea of people that just covers that place so you can barely see anything but people there. The entire city was caught up in the confusion, and they dragged these guys. It's a wonder they even survived. They dragged them into the amphitheater. They probably have them down there. This place was used, by the way, for like not only drama and theater, but debates, gladiators, fighting with each other or fighting with wild animals and things like that. And they drag them into that place, and they're about to kill them. They really want to kill Paul, and they're screaming over and over for 2 hours, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians." And here's Paul, and he's thinking, "I've got to save my friends. They're after me. They're not after these guys. It's not about them. I've got to do something." And so he wants to go in there. Now, granted, it's almost certain death if he does, because they want to take him out. But he's got his innocent buddies over there, his friends, Gaius and Aristarchus. He wants to go in. The disciples are, "No, are you insane? You can't go in there. They'll kill you." And he's, "But I've got to go in there. I mean, it's not about them. They want me." And the disciples are, "No." And in fact, some of the officials of Asia, because Paul, you know, apparently was having so much success, he had made friends in high places. Even some of the officials of the city were holding him back and saying, "No, don't do it. Don't go in there. They will kill you. What profit is it?" And The Jews apparently thought they were going to die in the process, and they were thinking, these stupid Christians come in here with this Jesus stuff. Next thing you know, they're going to kill us too. So they drag Alexander out, and they say, do something, buddy. Go tell them. It's not us. We don't believe in this guy. And Alexander gets out there and tries to get their attention. They find out that he's a Jew, and they just get even madder. They're like, we're going to kill everybody. You let God sort, let Diana sort them out. We'll just slaughter them all. And things are about to get bad. Praise God. What do you do when Satan fights back, strikes back that hard? What do you do? Things are literally out of control. You're sitting here one moment thinking, praise God, man, we got it going. Boy, the gospel is exploding. Man, folks are getting saved. They're getting baptized. We're just, man, I don't know why I didn't start doing this earlier, man. We're going to take this city for Christ, man. We're just going to erect a cross where the temple used to be. And the next thing you know, it looks like they're about to tear you limb from limb, and the entire city is beside themselves. What do you do in your own life? When you've had victories that have excited you, you've overcome things in your life, or you've seen people get saved that you've been praying for, or things are going well, God is blessing you in some wild way, financially maybe, or some opportunity, or with the kingdom, you see advancements being made. Maybe with your family, you know, your children are getting saved, or whatever it is, and you're thrilled with the success, and all of a sudden this Mack truck from Satan comes and blindsides you and knocks you off your feet, and you're there and you don't know what to do because it looks very grave. You know, we all want to have a nice, you know, optimistic outlook, but what do you do when you sit there and it looks like it's over? It looks like you're about to die. Gee, things were going so well. Doesn't look good now. What do you do? Well, what did Paul do? How did Paul react to that situation when he was faced with his own death and even possibly the death of his friends? When everything he'd been building and working for looked like it was about to suddenly be snatched away by a violent mob. Amazingly, I love how this works. You can look at other epistles in the Bible and find out what people were thinking when this kind of stuff was going on in the book of Acts, because they talk about it. They actually write letters to each other about it. So in order to know what was going through Paul's mind at that point, we can go over to 2 Corinthians chapter 1, where he tells the Corinthians what was going on through his mind at that moment. So let's go ahead and take a look at that. 2 Corinthians chapter 1, starting at verse 8. And this is what he was thinking at the time. He said, "For we do not want you to be ignorant, brethren, of our trouble which came to us in Asia," meaning Ephesus, where, you know, it's located in Asia, "which came to us in Asia, that we were burdened beyond measure, above strength, so that we despaired even of life. Yes, we had the sentence of death in ourselves, so that we should not trust in ourselves, but in God who raises the dead, who delivered us from so great a death and does deliver us, in whom we trust that He will still deliver us." And I'm going to pause right there. Paul said that he and his companions were burdened beyond measure, above strength. They thought they were going to die. Everything around them told them that this was it. The gig was up. They were going to die. They were checking out of this place. It was so bad, there was nothing they could do. They figured they wouldn't make it out alive. What do you do when 25,000 people decide that they want you dead? Thank you, Dennis. It looked really bad. Now, as I was watching these videos, trying to find one that I could use today, which I didn't find, it was amazing some of the stuff that I saw, though. I mean, some of the police, even, when the crowd would come down the street and start surrounding the police car, start coming in and breaking through the perimeter, The cops even got out. They said, you know what, it's 3 against, 10,000. I think the odds are a little steep. Why don't we just go get a donut? And they abandoned the patrol car. Next thing you know, the lights are still going on the patrol car, and it's rocking up and down. Next thing you know, it's turned over upside down. It's set on fire. Other cars and businesses are set on fire, and those guys are out of there. They're drinking Dunkin' Donuts, and glad we got out of that thing. What do you do? There's nothing you can do. It's overwhelming. It literally is out of your control. And there are times in life where you face situations that are literally out of your control. There is nothing you can do but trust God. Nothing you can do but trust God. And the stakes are high. It's life and death, and there's nothing you can do but trust God. What do you do? Praise God. Paul said there was a purpose in God allowing him to be there. He said, I'm glad, basically, that God allowed me there. He had a purpose in it, and it was so that we would not trust in ourselves, but we would rather trust in God who raises the dead. I know my God has a purpose for me. He will either deliver me from this death, or if they kill me, He will raise me. But my trust is secure. I am secure in the one in whom I have entrusted my soul. When the time comes to go home, I'm going. But I don't believe it's yet, and so I'm just going to cast myself, my cares, on the one who is able to raise the dead if necessary. What can I do? What else can I do? I'm yours, God. And so when facing a satanic counterattack, I would submit to you that the first thing you do, number one, trust in God, because He is able to deliver you. Trust in God because He is able to deliver you. I know your first reaction is panic. That's my first reaction. This isn't supposed to be happening. What is this? I've got to figure it out. I've got to come to a solution. I've got to make it work. I've got to do something, call people, make a plan, strategize, do something to make it work. And I know, of course, I'm a Christian also. I'm going to at some point get around to trusting God, but right now I've just got to do it. I can't be caught up in all this idealism. I got to do something. You know that feeling? It looks bad. You're in a panic. Well, what are we going to do? And I've seen people. It's so natural to do. You just want to react at first. Well, what do we do? Okay. Well, let's talk about it. Let's make a plan. Paul said he was glad he was in a situation. There's nothing he could do so that he wouldn't trust in himself. He would trust in God who raises the dead. Paul said God delivered them in the past. He delivers us today, and so I'm going to trust that He will still deliver us in the future. He doesn't change.